From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Korva Coleman, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Korva. Thank you very much. We got a great show for you this week. Drew Carey will be joining us later to show us how a game show host does a game show. Yes, great guy. Happy to have him. But first, last week we made some jokes, some mild jokes, about the supporters of Barack Obama. We kind of compared them to a cult. We sort of implied they're a bit like Scientologists. And we got a lot of outraged letters accusing us of going too far, of revealing our biases, and worst, of being unfunny, which, apropos of nothing, is exactly the response we get from Scientologists when we make fun of them. So, to the Obamaniacs in our audience, let me quote that great sage, Warren Oates. Lighten up, Francis. Besides, if you write about him and we keep it up, we'll all be swallowed by great crevices in the earth anyway soon. So, before that happens, give us a call. The number is 1-888-924-8924 or 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Lindsay from New York, New York.
Hey, how are things in Gotham?
They are excellent.
Excellent? Wow. And what do you do there?
I'm an attorney.
Oh.
One of the few.
One of the few, the many, the proud. Is your life just all about, you know, corner offices and moral turpitude like in Michael Clayton?
I'm a first year, so I'm not at the corner yet, but, you know.
But you still got the moral turpitude.
Of course.
They start you that early. All right.
It's standard, yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to our show, Lindsay. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a television personality and the man wholly responsible for the blog MoRocca180.com, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Lindsay.
Next, say hello to a comedian who will be performing at the Riverside Theater in Vero Beach, Florida on April 3rd, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, Lindsay.
And lastly, the host of Too Beautiful to Live on KIRO AM in Seattle, Luke Burbank.
Hi, Luke.
Hiya, Lindsay.
Welcome to the show, Lindsay. Now, you're going to play Who's Korva This Time? Korva Coleman, filling in for Carl Castle, is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will of course, win our prize, Carl's Voice, on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
I smell sex and Ben Gay.
That was the blogger known as T-Bog. He was reacting to news about John McCain's alleged relationship with whom?
A lobbyist.
A lobbyist, indeed. On Thursday, under the provocative headline, For McCain, Self-Confidence on Ethics Poses Its Own Risk, ooh, the New York Times published a story pointing out that in his career, Republican presidential candidate John McCain has had a more complex relationship with special interests than his rhetoric would lead you to believe. Well, jeepers. Oh, little footnote, just a bit of color. His aides were so worried that he was canoodling with an attractive female lobbyist back in 2000 that they had to run an intervention. Cover your heads, it's a bimbo eruption. McCain held a press conference the same day, Thursday, said a lot about his integrity and how he would never sell his office to lobbyists. Fine, yes, great, you bet. But did he or did he not Lewinsky that lobbyist? He says, and this is his entire response verbatim, quote, no, unquote. That's it. Will we ever know the truth? Well, somewhere in a remote part of Virginia, the doors to a cryogenic sleep chamber just opened. And Linda Tripp stepped out, saying, my country needs me once again.
This is hotter than that sex scene in Cocoon.
I saw him, you know, angrily saying no, and if he says no, I'm happy to believe him. But it seems to me that this is a thing he could spin to suggest some pride in the fact
that the
people
babes
thought that the babes were coming his way. Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah.
You think so? Sure.
Like he could have just come out.
Proud of the little fellow when I heard.
I said, yeah, I love it. Senator Hefner.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Like the McCain press conference would be, he just comes out in front of all of the assembled reporters, he looks over to his chief of staff, and they high-five. And then he just goes back.
You know, I think he'd be elected by acclamation. Well, very good, Lindsay. Here is your next quote.
Only 47 years after the Bay of Pigs, he has toppled from power.
That was Paul Keel of the website Talking Points Memo, commemorating the resignation from office of whom?
Castro.
Exactly right. Fidel Castro. Sure, you could say that the CIA's efforts to depose the Cuban dictator finally worked. Using their secret aging ray, which made him slowly lose strength and agility over the course of 5 decades. Or, if you wanted, you could give the credit to Castro himself. When he led his guerrilla army into Havana in January 1959, he did promise that he would relinquish power. Sure, it took him a while. You know how hard it is to move. You got to find the right boxes and stuff. The Bush administration, of course, took some pride that they have accomplished what 9 previous administrations could not manage. Yeah, that's right. He's going to land in another aircraft carrier.
Mission Akai, love
but
this.
Now they're plotting how to overthrow Fidel's successor, his 76-year-old brother, Raul Castro. White House sources say they should be able to get rid of him in about 15 years, depending on whether or not he's watching his salt. Here, Lindsay, is your last quote.
Citizens who observe or encounter falling debris should notify your local public safety agency and stay away from it.
That was a quote from FEMA's 18-page guide that they issued about how to deal with the threat of what falling to Earth after it was shot down on Wednesday night.
Pieces of the spy satellite.
Exactly right. You're very good today.
You know, it's exciting because I got to win and fill for the whole time.
Yeah. So a little while ago, the Pentagon announced that a top-secret spy satellite the size of a bus had malfunctioned shortly after being placed in orbit. Nothing to worry about, no problem. The death ray lasers are pointed the other way. Go about your business, citizens. Oh, and by the way, they're going to spend $60 million to shoot it down. The reason that the Pentagon gave for the first ever orbital target practice was that the satellite had some dangerous chemicals in its fuel tank. Wouldn't want that to hit the ground because, in a spokesman's words, quote, somebody might end up in the hospital, unquote. Oh. Slightly more suspicious types suspect it was all about putting on a show for the Chinese, who demonstrated their own ability to shoot down satellites a few months ago. Others, even more conspiracy-minded, say that the satellite had photographed and recorded one of John McCain's meetings with that lobbyist.
Ooh.
Needed to be taken care of, if you know what I mean.
You know, I think that when my son heard that he's 9 and really violent, and I think when I told them from having been on this show, I said, you know, there's the spy satellite, it's the size of a minivan, because that's what you guys say. Yeah. I always go home and tell them the stuff I learned. And I think he said, why don't they shoot it down?
Really?
I think, yeah.
They're taking cues from your 9-year-old son?
Well, I have a funny feeling that there's a lot of kind of 9-year-old boy mentality in the Pentagon, would be my guess.
It's possible.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they were all probably like with rubber bands and stuff in the break room. Just, why don't we shoot it down? Honestly, how many eye injuries do you think there have been during break time at the
you
Pentagon?
Corva, how did Lindsay do in our quiz?
Well, Lindsay got all 3 right. Carl Castle will be recording the message on her answering machine.
Well done, Lindsay. Congratulations.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Right now, panel, it's time once again for Wait, Wait, On the Trail.
Yeah! I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night.
Bullseye, Annie.
I love Corva, get your gun.
Yeah. Mo, some commentators, including us, as I said, have been criticized by Barack Obama supporters when we suggest his campaign is becoming a personality cult. Well, I'm sure there's another good explanation for what happened at an Obama rally in Texas on Wednesday when the candidate got a round of applause from the 17,000 1,000 people in attendance just for doing what?
Oh, was it for sneezing or clearing his throat, or it was for something like that?
Yes, he blew his nose.
Blew his nose. Okay, yeah.
He told the crowd he had a cold, causing his hordes of loyal supporters to run around trying to get one themselves. And then he apologized to the crowd. He turned away from the mic. He pulled out a hanky or Kleenex. Accounts differ. And blew his nose, getting, of course, a round of applause. He then whipped the crowd into a frenzy by sneezing, coughing, and then, in the kind of brilliant rhetorical coup that he's become famous for, he hawked up a loogie.
Man,
which is now selling for $250,000 on eBay.
What's that thing where you put one finger against one nostril and shoot?
A farmer's blow.
If he gets applause for that, then we're in trouble.
You think so?
You know what? It gave the crowd hope.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth when you sneeze. Don't put them funky things on me.
Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Bluff the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Julian.
Hey, Julian, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Toledo, Ohio.
Wow.
Yeah.
You sound, I guess the word I'm looking for is resigned.
Yeah, that's about right.
Is that right, Toledo? That works. What do you do there in Toledo?
I'm a college professor.
I see. Because Toledo, of course, known as the Athens of the far northwest corner of Ohio.
Actually, some in our administration think we should be the MIT on the Ottawa River.
Really?
Yes.
And what do you think the chances of that happening are?
Rather small.
All right. Julian, welcome to the show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Corva, what is Julian's topic?
So, tell me about your mother.
Psychotherapy has come a long way since Sigmund Freud invited his first patient to lie back on the couch a century ago. This week, the discipline took another great leap forward. Our panelists are each going to tell you a story about an exciting new development in the field of curing human misery. Only one of them is real. The other two are fakes, arising no doubt from the way our panelists were constantly lied to as children. Pick that real story, you'll win our prize. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
Anger issues, unexplained crying jags, Lou Dobbs terrors. These are all common problems psychotherapists deal with every day. But what if your mental unease is more related to, say, that Styrofoam McDLT box you tossed out back in 1986? Well, you're in luck, thanks to the emerging field of eco-psychology. According to Sandy Schulmeyer of Portland, Oregon, a practitioner of eco-psychology, global warming has added an extra layer of anxiety to what people are already feeling. Dr. Schulmeyer's prescription for his patients: spend more time outdoors and explore how their upbringing may have affected their relationship with nature. Now, there's not exactly a Sigmund Freud of eco-psychology, but it certainly has its believers, like Angeline Teamson, a graduate student at Lewis and Clark College. Ever since learning of eco-psychology, she's gained a new outlook, spending her class breaks sitting silently at the base of an old black walnut tree, rubbing her hands over the bark, and sniffing the empty shells left behind by squirrels. Now I ask you, would a crazy person do that?
Eco-psychology helping heal the psychic wounds left by cruelty to the environment. Your next story of an advance in head shrinking comes from Paula Poundstone.
Comfort foods can be out and out snugly. The American Psychological Association has approved a procedure which involves immersing the patient in a tub of tomato-based liquid in the treatment of anxiety disorders as well as episodic discontrol syndrome. Many of the patients who have benefited from this treatment were not just troubled but debilitated, says Dr. Diane Galinos, who pioneered the studies after discovering her chihuahua was substantially less jittery after being treated for skunk spray. Trust me, someone must really be suffering to be willing to seek relief from their mental health problems by dunking in tomato soup under a doctor's supervision, and they are. Patients experience a dramatic reduction in violent, impulsive, and anxiety-ridden behaviors. Although it is not understood how or why the tomato dip works, advocate Dr. Mark Sanchagrin claims many pharmaceutical approaches are equally mysterious and risk side effects. The only trouble with the tomato-based liquid therapy is that patients claim to feel like Bugs Bunny as they enter the tub.
Being dipped in tomato soup helps The Depressed, your last story about a psychiatric technique that'll make Tom Cruise really mad, comes from Morocco.
Soon after Fort Wayne, Indiana's Kathy Olufsen gave birth to her daughter Alice, she became consumed with fear. Fear that her baby would be eaten by a dingo. Fort Wayne's vibrant Australian immigrant community touts 721 pet dingoes. The animals are strictly monitored by the city, with fenced-in dingo runs and three dingo daycare centers in the city's Little Canberra neighborhood. Still, women like Olufsen fear that their babies will be eaten, a condition known as strepnosis. Purdue University's strepnosis specialist, Margaret Smith, recommends three courses of action to manage the fear. Number one, avoid all television and radio programs starring dingoes. Number two, visit a petting zoo and introduce your baby to a fearsome animal that doesn't like to eat babies, like a jackal or a coyote. Finally, number three, educate yourself about dingoes in case you encounter one that's not on a leash. For instance, as any Aussie will tell you, dingoes hate the taste of Chinese duck sauce. A baby lightly coated in duck sauce is certain to repel the most ravenous dingo.
Well, I know this is going to be tough, Julian. Let me review your choices for you. From Luke Burbank, the story of eco-psychology, professionals trying to help people deal with their guilt over their impact in the environment. From Paula Poundstone, tomato soup therapy, people being immersed in vegetable broth for their own good. And from Mo Rocca, techniques to help members of the Australian colony of Fort Wayne, Indiana, deal with their debilitating fear that dingoes will eat their babies.
It's called strepnosis, Peter. It has a name.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I think the eco-psychology one is true.
You think so, do you?
I think so.
Your choice, then, is Luke's story of the eco-psychology. Well, to bring you the real answer, we spoke to a professional who knows how to deal with this particular problem.
So if somebody came to me and was concerned about their carbon footprint, I'm not going to be telling them what they should be doing. If they're really interested in having kind of a healthier relationship with the environment, I'm going to help them do that. Like, how are they going to have a better relationship with the birds and the bees and the grass and the trees?
That was Deb Peranian, director of the Master's Program in Wilderness Therapy at Naropa University, discussing how she would treat a patient coming to her for ecotherapy. Yes, of course, sir. You got it right. Well done. As for the people terrified that dingoes might eat their baby, you're out of luck because, no, you earned a point for Luke. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Well done, sir. Very well done.
Great. Thank you.
Let me tell you about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the moon up above and a thing called
And now the game where we ask important people questions about unimportant things. It's called Not My Job.
All right.
Drew Carey started out as a successful stand-up comedian, a career which he transformed into one of the most popular sitcoms of the last 20 years, The Drew Carey Show. He also hosted a long-running... Dude, you're not supposed to snort at your own intro. Be cool.
No reason to go crazy.
Hang loose. He also hosted a long-running improv comedy show, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
All right.
And with all that success and fortune and fame, what mountain did he next choose to conquer? Why, that rarefied field where only the truly talented can succeed. He became a game show host. We're pleased to welcome the new host of The Price is Right, Drew Carey. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, how you doing, everybody?
So I have to ask you, you had it all. You had this hugely successful show, it's still in syndication, you had another show. You could do it anything you want. And you chose to take over from Bob Barker at The Price is Right. Why, sir? Why did you go that way?
Because I love giving away other people's money.
Yeah.
It's the greatest thing. I'm telling you, I think like everything in my life led me to be the host of The Price is Right, because it's full of regular people. They just stand in line and they get on the show. I get to give away cash. People are real excited. It's a studio just full of love and happiness and joy. I love being in that environment. I couldn't have picked a better job, honestly.
Wow.
That's wow. Yeah.
Do you ever feel weird when it's like a college student and you reveal the prize and it's like, a huge chandelier and a mahogany china closet.
All the time. It's always like a lovely grandfather clock, and you also get supplements.
Yeah.
That'll go awesome in the frat.
Yeah, every college kid needs garlic.
Drew, you took over, of course, one of the great legends of entertainment, the silver-haired Bob Barker himself.
Uh-huh.
Was that intimidating?
No, because he gave me his blessing.
Really? Was there like a transfer of power, a coronation? Did he knight you with the wand-like microphone?
Oh, you didn't see the special on CNN?
No.
It was like the Pope. There was smoke that came from a chimney.
Yeah, exactly. We have selected a host.
The CBS executives, they all met in Rome.
Yeah.
He did it on an interview, and I told CBS, I said, I'd only do it if Bob, you know, said it was cool. And then Bob, that was his exact quote, he says, it's cool with me.
What's your favorite game?
I like spinning the wheel, actually. And I like the Yodely Guy game, where he falls off the cliff.
Mountain Climber?
Mountain Climbers. Yeah. But everybody, all my friends call it the Yodely Guy game. And the reason I like it is because, you know, the farther off you are, I'm guessing, the price of something, the higher up the guy goes up the mountain. And at the end, if you're too much, he goes off the edge of the mountain and dies.
A grisly death.
Yeah. A really grisly death. And he has this little smile on his face, and they play this, it's really happy yodely music, and he's just marching up the mountain. He doesn't know what's happening.
He's like one of the Von Trapps going over the Alps.
Yeah, going for a walk, and then he just goes off the side of the cliff.
We have on this show, specifically Paula has on this show, made some comments about Cleveland. That our listeners in Cleveland were not... You don't even remember this, Paula, but...
No, I don't.
It's a show we did in Berkeley. We've rebroadcast it a couple times, and you make these jokes about Cleveland. And so since we've got you, Cleveland's most famous native son, if you will, I was wondering, could you tell us right now some great things about Cleveland? Why Cleveland is the best? Why Cleveland rocks, if you will?
Oh, the reason I like Cleveland so much is it's like... you know what it is? It's like a little mini Chicago. Everything you would like about Chicago...
Really?
Is in Cleveland. But Cleveland, to me, is a more manageable size. You can get from one side of the town to the other in like 20 minutes.
Does it have a tram, like a nice sort of transportation system?
The bus system is really good in Cleveland. As a matter of fact, I used to take the bus all the time when I was growing up.
And crosstown and uptown and downtown. And you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you say. You say to the friendly guy on the bus, you say, take me uptown, and he takes you right there.
That's great.
He doesn't have
he gives you a tip of the hat. Yeah. He rubs your hair.
Drew, he doesn't have a predetermined route.
Do you get back there a lot, Drew?
I don't get back as often as I'd like to, but you know.
Well, how often exactly do you get back there?
As long as the buses are running.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You get on an airplane and you say, "Take me to Cleveland."
To uptown.
Hey, as long as if you're going to New York, why don't you drop me off in Cleveland on the way? It won't be too out of your way, would it?
No. Well, Drew Carey, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You're the very nicest person ever to appear on television.
We're not referring to you, of course.
I know.
It was 40 years ago this week that an ordained Presbyterian minister named Fred Rogers stepped in front of a TV camera to put on a red cardigan for the first time. In honor of the late, great Mr. Rogers, we're going to ask you three questions about him. It's taken from a list put together by Mental Floss magazine.
Oh, man.
Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice in the home answering machine.
All right.
And maybe you'll learn a little something for use in your own show.
All right.
Corva, who is Drew Carey playing for?
Ellen Nixon in Houston, Texas.
First question about Mr. Rogers.
All right.
He was hugely popular, of course, among multiple generations of children. Mm-hmm. And their children when they grew up. But he had one rather surprising but very enthusiastic fan. Who was it? A, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il. B, Coco the talking gorilla. Or C, Scientology founder L. Ron Hubbard.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Kim Jong-il.
No, it was Coco the gorilla. That was the famous gorilla. Yeah, wow. That was the famous gorilla that learned to use American Sign Language to communicate. She was also a very big fan of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And when Fred visited her in California, she gave him a big hug and then immediately bent down and took off his shoes.
Really?
Wow.
Now, you still have two more chances here.
All right.
Here we go. Mr. Rogers not only entertained and comforted generations of children, he had a profound effect on the history of the entertainment industry. How? Was it A, wanting the audience's viewpoint to be more like that of an active child, he invented the modern television camera dolly? B, he almost single-handedly saved the VCR by convincing the Supreme Court that taping his shows would be fine with him? Or C, not wanting to scare children, he developed the natural-looking TV makeup still used today?
Thank Pornography you. Saved the VCR. I don't believe the third one. I'd say A.
You're going to go for A, that he invented the modern camera dolly so it could move around?
Ooh, that feels right.
It feels right, Mo?
No, he didn't invent the camera dolly, because the camera dolly was invented for movies. It's probably the VCR.
Is that your choice?
Yeah, B.
You're right. Very good. You figured it out. That's exactly what happened.
Oh, my gosh.
In the 70s, the movie studios sued the makers of video recorders. They said their machines would infringe on their patent by recording their material. But Fred Rogers testified that taping his show would allow parents to watch it with their kids. He conceived of time shifting, you see.
Right.
And thus he thought VCRs would be a good thing. The Supreme Court cited his testimony in their seminal decision, Sony versus Universal, which made VCRs legal. So it was Fred Rogers and porn.
Yeah.
That saved the
winning
VCR.
Combination. Yeah.
Last question. If you get this one right, you'll win.
All right.
By the end of his career, Mr. Rogers was a universally beloved figure, especially in his hometown of Pittsburgh, as evidenced by what incident? A, when Premonti Brothers, the famous Pittsburgh sandwich shop, made fun of him with a, quote, Mr. Rogers bland sandwich. They had not a single customer walk into their store until they apologized.
Wow.
Was it B, people would line up on the deck of the pool where he swam every morning just to applaud him when he finished? Or C, when the local news reported his car had been stolen, it was returned the next day with a note reading, quote, if we'd known it was yours, we never would have taken it.
Oh, Jesus, they're all so heartwarming. I want them all to be right.
Yeah.
It's not B, people didn't line up to watch him swim. I doubt that they would ever invent a bland sandwich and that nobody would walk in there.
Right.
See, people walk into that place no matter what. They walk in there when they're drunk. They're not going to care about Mr. Rogers. So I'll say it was C.
You're going to go with C, that they gave him his car back?
Yeah.
You're right. Oh. Very good. That's what happened.
Yay. So happy everyone.
That is impressive deduction.
I'm right, really Gary. Impressed about your knowledge of drunk dining at Premonti Brothers, because you're absolutely right about that.
Instead of getting low jack, I'm going to put a sign on my car that says, this car belongs to Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, very smart. Yeah.
Corva, how did Drew Carey do in our quiz?
Well, Peter, Drew got 2 out of 3 correct, and so he's 1 for Ellen Nixon.
Congratulations.
Hey, Ellen.
Well done.
I'm so nervous about losing on the show, I can't tell you.
No, man, you pulled it off. It was great. Drew Carey is the host of The Price is Right. You can also see him on The Power of 10 and Whose Line Is It Anyway? Drew Carey, thank you so much for joining us.
My
what
pleasure.
A pleasure to have you.
It was a real
thank
honor.
You.
Thank you.
Oh, it was an honor to have you. Bye-bye, Drew.
Bye.
In just a minute, Corva Coleman puts E.E. Cummings to shame with poetic takes on the week's news. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Mo, a new survey this week found the owners of a certain product are 60% more likely to be self-centered and arrogant than the people who own the competing product. What is this product with a strong statistical correlation with jerkitude?
Well, SUV is the first thing that comes to mind.
No.
McMansions. Is it like platform shoes?
No.
Like lifts? Give me a people with big weaponry.
No.
Give me a clue.
They're people who use this are known as eye jerks.
Ooh. Oh, people with iPods?
No, well,
people with Macs.
People with Macintosh users,
okay.
Yes. A company called Mindset Media surveyed 7,500 users of Apple Macintoshes and Windows-based PCs. and they found that the Homo Machian species consider themselves superior in every way to the typical Windows user, who they consider to be a lowly, unenlightened creature, so clumsy and stupid they need two mouse buttons to operate their primitive machines. Mac users, on the other hand, consider themselves to be hip, with it artistic types, which is obvious from the elegant way they put their little Apple sticker in the rear window of their Priuses.
That's Prii.
Excuse me.
Prii. Yeah. Exactly.
Learn the terms.
Yeah, I can guess your operating system, Luke. In fact, according to the survey, the only kind of person more smug and self-satisfied than a Mac user is a Mac user who supports Barack Obama.
Mac users for change.
Yeah. Was that Barackintosh, right?
I haven't even asked anybody to break a dollar in the last couple of months. I just can't stand the word change anymore. If he says it one more time, I'm going to want things just to stay the way they are.
You know what she should do? If they keep going back, change, experience, she should then start saying change. And he'll go, experience, change, experience. Mm-hmm. Like a vaudeville routine.
She tried that in Nevada. It didn't work.
Yeah. She's going to have to weep.
Paula Lane Jensen, a tattoo artist in Canada, is taking a course of antibiotics after he tried to sex up a tattoo in his own left leg. It's a busty cowgirl, and he tried to augment it with what?
A busty cowgirl?
Yes. He did this, presumably he may have done it to himself, or he probably had another artist do it.
He tried to actually inflate the breast?
Yes, he did. He put in real breast implants into the tattoo.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, the cowgirl got a Barbie-sized boob job in December. She looked great. In fact, a few days after the operation, she was cast in an all-tattoo version of Baywatch. But Mr. Jensen's body was not pleased with the results. Within a few weeks, it began to reject the tiny, little silicone breast implants. I should point out that's not a phrase you hear a lot, tiny, little silicone breast implants.
We'll it's really you. Only for the perfectionist.
Yeah.
I love it. It's tattoos for the blind.
Exactly, in a way.
Way to see the good in it, Mo.
Anyway, we'll spare you the details involved in what happened next. Let's just say that Buckaroo Betty is back to her original size. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank. First, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here. At the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, you can also download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Bob Morwell from Quincy, Illinois.
Hey, how are things in Quincy?
Cold.
Yeah, they're pretty much cold all over Illinois. How are you dealing with the winter?
Well, you generally hunker down and try to think warm thoughts.
You do. What are some of the warm thoughts you think, if I may ask?
Well, generally I think about how much I enjoy public radio.
No, good save. Good save. Well done. Well, welcome.
Marshall gives me a warm feeling all over.
Oh, doesn't he, though? Well, welcome to the show, Bob. You're going to play the game in which you have to finish three news-related limericks. Corva Coleman right here is going to start reading them. She's not going to finish them, though. That's your job. Do that two times out of three. You'll win our prize. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right. Here's your first limerick.
I'm not tired or fusty or moldy, and my synapses still fire boldly. But the radio dial made my heart stop a while. Our 80s songs now are called...
Oldies.
Right! So you're planning to spend the weekend rocking out to the oldies? If you're over 35, and this being public radio, we assume you all are, you're in for a nasty surprise. 80s music is now being marketed as oldies music. Station executives say that it makes sense for oldies stations to play 80s music because advertisers know that listeners who need a daily dose of Hall & Oates could probably also use a refreshing can of Ensure. Make room for new oldsters like Milli Vanilli, the Go-Go's, and Kenny Loggins. Songs from the 60s and 70s have been downgraded to decrepit hits. While music from the 50s is labeled primitive tribal dances.
Hall & Oates was one of the bands highest in fiber, though.
Yeah, that's so important.
In fairness.
They moved me.
Yeah, well. All right, here's your next limerick, Bob.
Marks and Spencer likes products well-placed, so I sort the cans with meaty paste. And yes, I do quibble to find high-class kibble. I evaluate pet food by...
taste.
Yes, taste. Think you've got a lousy job? Well, buck up. You could be Simon Allison, food tester to the pets. That's right. When Allison goes to work at Marks and Spencer in Britain, he spends the day taste testing cat and dog food. Like a wine taster, Allison tastes the food, which he admits is mostly bland. He does not swallow it. Says Allison, quote, I'm looking for a pate texture, almost to the point where you could spread it on crusty bread. His cat food of choice? It's a luxury chicken dinner with vegetables that he describes this way. Quote, it has the taste and aroma of chicken and some of what you call the red flavors, things like heart and liver, gutsy, savory notes. Then you get a mealy green pea pulse aroma and occasionally a sweeter note from the carrot. And then he heard a can opener and ran over to the kitchen.
Does he eat cat and dog food?
Apparently he does. Yeah, okay. He's doing the whole Marks & Spencer line.
He doesn't have to do fish food.
Oh, Lord, I hope not.
Does he knock small plastic lids under the refrigerator?
Love it. This is great.
All right, very good, Bob. Here's your last limerick.
Existentialist jaws grow more slack. It's like nothingness. Sartre strikes back. Now poor helpless light must give up the fight and surrender to this deep dark.
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
Yeah.
How about black?
Black. Okay.
Scientists have done it. This month they unveiled a paper-thin material that absorbs 99.955% of the light that hits it, making it the blackest black ever achieved, 30 times darker than the government's official standard for black. Said Sean Yulin, one of the scientists at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, it's very deep, like a forest in the darkest night. Nothing comes back to you. It's very, very dark. It's dark, I tell you.
What is it? Does it have a special name?
Blackity black black black. I don't know.
It's a scientific name for it.
What? I have no idea.
No, I'm just wondering.
It's made of nanotubes. I know that. Okay. It's kind of interesting. But they're not going to rest, because what they do is they're not going to stop until they achieve that holy grail of blackness, something as dark as Dick Cheney's soul. They're
going to
hold it up.
Well, they should name it, because it's the new black.
It is, in fact. It is, in fact, the new black.
I'm sure Anna Wintour, all the fashion magazines are going to want to know what this color is.
Corva, how did Bob do in our quiz?
Well, Peter, Bob got 2 out of 3 right. So, Bob, you won, and Carl will do the outgoing message on your answering machine.
Well, I have a reason to live now.
Congratulations, Bob. Well done. So glad we could help you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Black like Bob's mood.
It's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Corva, can you give us the scores?
Paula, Mo, and Luke are tied. Each has 3 points.
We have randomly selected Paula to go first, so Paula, here we go. The clock will start when they begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Thousands of angry Serbs gathered in Belgrade to protest Blank's Declaration of Independence.
Kosovo.
Right. In the largest recall of its kind, the USDA recalled 143 million pounds of frozen Blank.
Beef.
Right. To make it easier for designers to create compatible software, Blank announced it would share some of its trade secrets.
Microsoft?
Yes. Stanford University announced Wednesday that it will eliminate blank for students with family incomes less than $100,000 a year.
Tuition.
Right. A Wisconsin teen who was slightly injured when he tried drilling into a high-powered bullet told reporters afterwards, blank.
Ouch.
No, he said, I'd kind of like to drop it right here, but I know that's not going to happen. Steve Guttenberg and Penn Jillette were announced as two of the contestants on this season's blank.
Dancing with the Stars?
Right. Much was made of the New York Magazine spread with blank naked impersonating Marilyn Monroe.
Barack Obama.
No. He looked dreamy.
What a change that is.
Lindsay Lohan it was. A Boulder, Colorado strip club says it should qualify as a restaurant under zoning rules in part because it blanks.
has chips.
No, because it serves pieces of fruit in its mixed drinks. Yeah, the Nitro Club has naked dancers, but it also has real live fruit right there in the drinks. Fruit like maraschino cherries and strawberry margaritas. And since customers with food in their mouths are restaurant customers, the owner of Nitro said he obviously isn't running an indoor amusement establishment, which has lots of regulations and should not be forced to undergo a review process before the planning board, so there. Korva, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Well, she got 5 right for 10 more points. Paula now has 13 points, and she's taken the lead.
All right, Mo, you're up next. Please fill in the blank. Toshiba angered early adopters when it announced it was abandoning the HD blank format.
Television. No, HD... HD TV.
No, HD DVDs. It had a different format.
Goodness.
For the first time since an attack in December, the Big Cat exhibit reopened at the zoo in blank.
San Francisco.
Right? MSNBC apologized for mistakenly showing a picture of blank over Chris Matthews' shoulder as he talked about Barack Obama.
Osama bin Laden.
Right. Thousands of Skywatchers gathered Wednesday to watch the last blank until 2010.
Ooh, is it the last space shuttle launch?
No, the last total lunar eclipse.
Oh, God, and I mentioned an eclipse.
In what they say is an attempt to save Britain's pork industry, pig farmers gathered in London hoping for an internet hit with their song called Blank.
Pork me up.
No. Stand by your ham. Children in Nicaragua have been given hundreds of shirts and caps that proclaimed blank as last month's Super Bowl champions.
Oh, well, I mean, the Giants won.
No, but
the
they
Patriots.
Gave... The Patriots. Yeah, too late.
Oh.
An armed robber snuck up on a man in Fontana, California, and demanded that he hand over his blanks.
Hand over your traveler's checks.
No, hand over your tacos. The taco stand at San Bernardino and Fontana Avenues must have incredible tacos. An armed robber jumped a man leaving the taco stand and ignored his wallet, his car keys, his cell phone. Instead, he grabbed his bag filled with $20 worth of tacos. The angry victim, not dissuaded by the thief's gun, demanded the tacos back. Didn't get them back, said a police spokesman. Doing an armed robbery for tacos, that's a little out there.
I've been pistol whipped for a chalupa.
Korva, how did Mo do on our quiz?
Mo got 2 answers right.
What a
disaster. This has never happened to me before.
For a total of 4 points.
I just fell apart.
And you now have 7 points. Paula's got the lead with 13.
It's ever since the Steve Gutenberg thing.
Yeah.
No one can think.
The curse of Gutenberg.
Steve Gutenberg,
so
the dancer with the stars.
How many, then, does Luke need to blow past Paula and win the game?
Luke needs 5 questions right to tie. You need 6 to win outright.
Here we go, Luke. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. In an attempt to offer better protection, the FDA announced it would be completely overhauling next year's blank vaccine.
Flu.
Right. Apologizing for having to correct previous denials, Britain said on Thursday that the U.S. had used its airspace to transport blanks.
Nuclear weapons.
No terrorism suspects and renditions. One building collapsed when Nevada was hit by a blank on Thursday.
Earthquake.
Right. Supply fears pushed the price of blank over $100 this week.
Oil.
A barrel of oil, yes. An investigation in Britain found that 3 covered bridges were hit by trucks 62 times because the drivers blanked.
Sneezed.
No, we're looking at their GPS units instead of the signs that said, low bridge ahead. A man named Kevin O'Connell, who's nominated for the sound in Transformers, hopes not to lose his 20th consecutive blank on Sunday night.
Oscar.
Yes. Scientists discovered a fossil of what they're calling Beazel Bufo, a bowling ball-sized blank that was able to eat baby dinosaurs.
Toad.
Yes. According to a police report in New Hampshire, federal judge Robert Soma had a hard time producing his license before being arrested for drunk driving because he couldn't find it in blank.
The giant football helmet he was driving.
No, because he could not find his license in his purse. The judge was dressed in a stunning black cocktail dress, fishnet stockings, and high heels. He spoiled the effect, though, by wearing a smidge too much blue eyeshadow. He admitted to drinking 2 gin and tonics at a local pub, and after his arrest, he headed off to a vacation spot in the Caribbean to phone in his resignation. No doubt he was sick of the reporters constantly hounding him and shouting, "Who are you wearing?" Corva, did Luke do well enough to win?
Well, Peter, he needed 5 to tie, 6 to win. He got 5 answers correct for a total of 13 points total. He and Paula are this week's co-champions.
Hey, well done. Congratulations.
I can live with that.
You can live with that?
It's like a chop pot in poker.
You bet.
I'm with it.
It's like a what?
Whatever.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will Fidel Castro do now that he has retired as El Jefe Maximo of Cuba. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Warner Home Video, presenting Michael Clayton, a legal thriller starring George Clooney on Blu-ray, high-def, DVD, and on-demand today. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners on the web at realtor.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Joe Feldman. Don Hall is our house manager. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Other engineers include Lorna White, Lester Larchuk, and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, what will Fidel Castro do next? Morocco.
He'll be seen at the next Obama rally screaming, "Cambio!" before he faints.
Luke Burbank.
Oye, papi. After 93 years of longing, it's finally time for MTV Spring Break Fort Lauderdale.
And Paula Poundstone.
He's going to team up with the CIA as a consultant to come up with ways to kill him successfully.
And if Fidel Castro does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Corva Coleman, for doing such a great job filling in for Carl this week. Great to have you always. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Paula Poundstone, and Luke Burbank. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and Carl and I will be back with you from Birmingham, Alabama, next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.